Good afternoon, Flashback Twin Cities, on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Ozen here with you for the next hour, and also our good friend Tom Hsu.
Good morning.
How's it going over there?
Oh, afternoon, I suppose. I'm still stuck in our earlier time period.
Yeah, well, you have to get those cue cards adjusted over there.
Never.
And, you know, we don't really do a weather report here in the show, but I guess we're Minnesotans, so we have to mention the weather every single Saturday. It is a beautiful day for October. The sun's out there, and it's a crisp, cool breeze.
Mm-hmm.
But
get a little spattering of rain on my car as I was coming in.
You know,
just a little bit.
With the 1 o'clock time slot and getting guests to come in, I've been selling a great day to come to Stillwater a Saturday afternoon, have lunch, walk around. It's sunny and beautiful and warm. I'm not really meeting my sell. It's coming up a little short. Our guest last week, we were corresponding via email, and he said jokingly, "I'll come unless it snows." If you recall, on Friday we had that blizzard right before Saturday,
and yep.
We were going to have to improvise the show, which would have been fun. We could have done some different voices.
We could just make up voices the whole time. I'd be down for that. That's my kind of thing.
It may come to that at some point. So talking to Bob DeFloris, did you meet Bob when he was in here?
Yeah. Super nice guy.
Stan's guest. Bob is a collector of all things film, and I'm so happy to have met him today. I was doing some research, and as you know, here at Flashback Twin Cities, we preserve all things media and film, tapes, photos from the Twin Cities. Do you remember the DuMont Network, Tom?
Actually, I do.
You do? Mm-hmm. What's the DuMont Network?
I couldn't tell you right now, but I've heard of it.
Okay. Well, DuMont was what we maybe would consider the Fox Network of the 1950s. Now, not because they aired The Simpsons, but they were the fourth network. Probably the second network of TV distribution to NBC. So DuMont was on for about 10 years, about 1946 to 1956, and produced more than 20,000 TV episodes from the decade of 46 to 56. Mm. All those shows were created prior to the launch of Ampex's electronic videotape, which means every show was done live.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, it's live, and then when you watch it in California, Los Angeles, it's on a rerun, so more or less, or 2 hours later, of a film kinescope. So if you're living in Los Angeles, every TV show you watch at that point was on a kinescope, which was a fuzzier version of the live broadcast. And if you watch, like, old Honeymooners, you see what a kinescope looks like, because it looks like you took a videotape of a TV. So it's a little
fuzzy.
Sure, little
so it's
fuzzy.
Like twice as bad as what you would normally get, something like that.
So the DuMont Network, they had a lot of challenges, and we'll discuss that in a different show, but they went out of business, closed, and the video library, I'm sorry, the film library, more appropriately just call it, ended up in the hands of ABC for whatever reason. And it was reported, this was testified to the National Preservation Board of Film, Radio, and Television in 1996. 20,000 episodes on kinescopes were put into trucks and dumped into New York's East River in the early 70s. An entire film library because ABC, this is allegedly, but I talked to Bob, our friend Bob DeFloris, and he also heard the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that virtually all of Jackie Gleason's early Honeymoon sketches are now sitting at the bottom of the East River, New York. It might take a while to dry those out if we take a scuba diving trip to get those. But imagine this entire – first of all, this is a little bit before the environmental era, so I think that people must have thought that this is a great way to
clean
up – just
take your film and just throw it in the river. Why not?
You know, not even the garbage of the landfill. Just throw it in the river.
You know, yeah, they should have brought it out to where they have the E.T. video game buried over in Death Valley.
And if you don't catch the reference, Atari produced too many E.T. video games, which were just terrible, and they ended
horrible.
Up in a landfill in California. It's they decided, this is a...
Millions of cartridges.
A verified story.
Are buried. And so they basically just, you know, went ahead. So they did this way back then, and they did it in the 80s.
Other kinescopes were put through a silver reclaiming process because of the microscopic amounts of silver. You know, today, if you see a house that you want to get some copper or silver out of, you go in and take it. In the early 70s, you saw some kinescopes. You had to scrape the silver on it. So goodbye, Captain Video, and goodbye, Jackie Gleason. And what's left over, let's put into the river. ABC wanted room for their recent vintage videotapes in the warehouse.
You know, I'm sure they could have afforded another warehouse. I'm sure they could have.
So when people ask me, you know, why do you do this website and why do you have 17 boxes of tapes in your basement right now? There's a reason for this. We need to – it's important to look forward, but you got to look backward a little bit too. You got to look backward, and there's so much great history in this. I post videos online at tcmedianow.com. I'll plug that every so often today. Let's say you might have been on the news 25 years ago. There was a bad storm, or you were featured in one of those Before We Go segments, and that tape might not have ever been seen again. But I'm meeting people through the website and through the Facebook page, TC Media Now, that have seen themselves on the news again 30 years after they were on there and didn't have a VCR to tape it. Mm-hmm. So this is why I do it. And besides, there's a lot of great history that's getting thrown away. I think that people think that if you can't play something because you don't have a film projector, a slide projector, or a video machine, that it's worthless. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case yet. There's still a lot of machines out there. They're becoming scarce, but don't throw that away. It's great history. Even if you don't want it, talk to other people.
Someone will. I mean, at some point in everybody's life, they look back at all the nostalgic things mm-hmm. that they loved before, and they try to bring those back into right. their lives again. Like my dad's now watching all the shows when he was a kid. He's 64.
Right.
He's watching all the cowboy shows that didn't exist for 40 years.
Well, I was talking to Bob a little bit, and Bob was asking me, do you like MeTV? And I said, I love MeTV. The best part is these shows, which we watched on UHF TV.
Is that what Nick at Night was?
Well, MeTV is an antenna service because now we have so many more digital TV channels now. We can have channel 5.1, channel 5.2.
Yeah, yeah.
And MeTV, they air the same kind of programming that Nick at Night aired or even channel 9 aired when we were young. Mm-hmm. But the best part is because when we were watching those, we're watching them analog TV through an antenna and watching UHF TV. So if you're watching Bonanza or Dragnet, you're watching it more than likely through a fuzzy UHF picture.
Mm-hmm.
And the film was not cleaned. It was probably gone from box to box to station to station. But the best part now in the digital era was we can clean that film. You can watch it. I'm watching Bonanza right now, and I caught a little bit of Bonanza and Dragnet. That's how I prep the show. I watch shows I saw 30 years ago.
That's how you prep.
That's
how you live.
It's how I prep the show. the living part, that's a different story. But it looks great. And a couple of people who are MeTV fans have been commenting on how great it looks. And, you know, again, don't throw things away. Do not – Mississippi is a great river. Do not throw your family's slides in the Mississippi River.
It doesn't need any more family slides in that river.
No. We have a great guest today. We have Joan Steffen with us today. I'm very excited to have Joan Steffen on because we are actually reunited after 21 years, and I'm going to explain that story and tell Joan the best line she had that stuck with me for 20-some years about Joan, and I'm going to reveal this line after this break on Flashback Twin Cities on KLEB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities on KLEB. Tom Osmond here, and welcoming my very special guest, Joan Steffen.
Very special.
Very special
wow.
guest. Welcome.
Thank you. It's
That's
nice
a compliment.
To be here. I know. I got a very.
And the drive was okay today?
I know. Yeah. It was a little crazy out there. I mean, I was driving from South Minneapolis, basically, mm-hmm. and I thought, I'll avoid that 35W94 snafu.
Sure.
And so did everybody else. So it was a parking lot on 494.
You know, the sun is out, and people are trying to get outside. It's a rarity to see the sun here on a Saturday.
I know. But we do have 45-mile-an-hour winds to kind of offset that sun. So it's great.
It keeps us humble. We don't want to get too confident. Okay, so I'm going to reveal the big Joan message, which has stuck with me for 21 years.
I cannot wait to hear what I thought was important 21 years
ago. Let's flash back. I was Well, I will say I was in school. I'm not going to say how old I was.
Oh,
I was in school.
He was like seven.
Well, not quite, but about 1991, 92. Uh-huh. And it was our journalism unit, our TV unit, and, and Joan Steffen was our guest speaker. And imagine a group of 12-year-olds, okay? And we're talking this woman on TV.
This is a bad start. Imagine a group of 12-year-olds.
And I have to admit, I wasn't any different then than I am now, so I'm way ahead. I'm keeping track of all these things going on in the media that the other kids are not paying attention to. So Joan says that she had a tough time getting into TV because her voice was too...
Yeah, soothing.
Well, that wasn't the word she used.
Okay.
She used the word...
Oh, yes.
She used the word... My voice is too sexy to be on TV.
No, they called it a bedroom voice is what they called it. I would never have used the word sexy.
You said that to 12-year-olds? Oh, no.
Well.
Yes, WCCO told me that my voice was a bedroom voice. It would put people to sleep.
I'm remembering the word differently, but but being my guest, you drove a long ways here, I'm just saying. But Joan, I listened to you from that point forward, I thought, her voice is very... Well, okay, we'll say soothing.
Soothing.
I want to make sure the audience is happy here.
He's nodding off right now.
Yeah, it's very soothing. But
that was so frustrating to me, though, because I had dreamed of working at WCCO Television. Dreamed. And I was working up in Duluth at the time, and I came down, and I had my audition tape, and I sat in front of Reed Johnson, maybe, was the news director at the time. And he looked me in the eye, and he said, "We can't hire you here. You'll put people to sleep with that voice."
So
oh, my gosh.
So you took that tape, and then you went over to Golden Valley.
I did.
And
I was hired within a week or two.
Well,
Channel 11.
Let's talk about Channel 11 in 1982.
Okay. 1982. Mm-hmm.
And Channel 11 in 1982 was not exactly your powerhouse news station.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, it was WTCN at the time. It wasn't like I was going to WCCO. I mean, that had a history. And KSDP was faltering at that time, but it still had a history. And the history of WTCN was kind of like Mel Jazz and the matinee movie. And, you know, it really wasn't about news. But as luck would have it, Gannett came in and bought it about a year maybe after I worked there.
Well, they were trying to make it about news, and they went through about seven different anchors in a year.
Bachman.
John Bachman, great guy.
Awesome.
We have a library of John Bachman on tcmedianow.com. We did an interview with him, actually, last fall before he retired.
He's a cool guy.
Great guy. So what was your original role? So did you go there to be an anchor?
No, I did not. I wanted to be, but they... am I lying to you?
I don't think I'm lying to you.
I think I started as a reporter, and then they moved me into the anchor position really shortly after I got there.
Were you doing weekends? Or
I was doing weekends. I was glued to the weekend anchor chair for 17 years, so except when they let me off to go anchor with majors, you know, when everybody else would take time off.
Right.
But I did start as a reporter, and then very shortly I moved into the anchor chair. I was so grateful for that.
And you went to school originally to be... an actress. You wanted to be a Hollywood star.
I wanted to be Carol Burnett, to be perfectly clear. I wanted to be Carol Burnett. I wanted to do sketch comedy. I wanted to make people laugh. I wanted to have fun. I didn't necessarily want to be a star because that didn't appeal to me, but I wanted to do that. Well, but Carol Burnett was already taken, dang it.
Well, the challenge is, you know, Vicki Lawrence wrote her letter and said she wanted to be her. And look how that worked out for her.
And that was too late for me as well. I was thinking I could make a great Vicki Lawrence, but no. So I went out and studied at Warner Brothers Film Actors Workshop for a while, and they soon discovered that I was not tall and blonde and thin and high-cheekboned, and, you know, I left after about 6 months.
Did you do any movies, cameos, walk-ons at all?
No, I couldn't even get a game show. I really wanted a game show just to support myself out there. I got nothing, which just, to me, means that I wasn't meant to be out there.
So you came back to Minneapolis with you know, were you discouraged, were you distraught, or did you thought, okay, if I can't play in the movies, I'll be on TV, but I'll play a news reporter or a news anchor, because you didn't go the traditional journalism route.
No, I didn't. Thank you for noticing. I'm absolutely good with that. I don't have a college degree, and I'm absolutely good with that. I learned so much on the job. Mm-hmm. I came back and I went to Brown Institute, and
brownies.
Tom's giving his thumbs up here.
Well, here's the part that's going to frustrate you though. I started, and I think it was maybe 6 weeks later they had started me in the second quadrant, and then they moved me on to the fourth, and then I got a job up in Duluth, and they went, fine, you graduated. So I was only there for like 6 weeks before they allowed me to graduate because I got a job up in Duluth on television.
Well, that took out their work away from them because they're supposed to place you, and I'm guessing that in 1999 when you graduated, that was what that was still their goal to do that.
And yeah. So it was just kind of a crazy thing where I ended up going up to Duluth actually on my now ex-husband's interview. He was going up to interview for a job on this TV station, mm-hmm. KBJR, Superior Television for the Port Cities. And I just kind of raised my hand and said, may I audition as well? And they said, yeah, but there's no place for women in television. So, you know, one of those kind Ooh. Of, yeah, I know. The guy who was the news director at the time was very old school, but he allowed me to, he gave me a script and sat me in front of a television camera and allowed me to act mm-hmm. like a mm-hmm. news anchor. I acted like Ron Majors. That mm-hmm. was my goal. And they hired both of us.
Where's that video?
I would love to know where that video is. I have no idea. But that was crazy time. You ran your own teleprompter and everything up in Duluth. That was
give
nuts.
Me a challenge. We're going to find the video. Oh, give me a challenge.
Oh, yeah. KBJR probably would have it if anybody
Someone
would.
Has it in a box somewhere, in a banker, right. banker's box in an office.
Right.
So Duluth, now Duluth is a great hopping city, mm-hmm. but the challenge of Duluth is once the summer ends, then it's fall and winter in Duluth, and if you're not in college, it's not as fun as living in Minneapolis in the winter.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that when you work in Duluth Television, you make, well, at least at that point, I was their main anchor, their main female anchor, ultimately, and I was making $600 a month. And so the challenge is to enjoy Duluth on $600 a month when you're covered with snow and ice and, you know, you need to make car payments. And
that barely covers two nights of grandma's on the pier.
I know, right? I know the times have changed, but I never cracked five figures up in Duluth.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you came to, you brought your tapes with you and you brought your energy with you, and maybe it's best Channel 4 didn't take you on because if you think about it, the opportunities at Channel 4 would have been much more competitive and much more edgier,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a little bit more, well, you don't have a college degree, you're a brown person from Duluth.
Right. I mean, I landed exactly where I was supposed to land. I have no question about that. And I loved being there when you saw everything change. I mean, you saw Gannett come in and pour all this money into it, and for all of the flack that we took about being the Care Bears and mm-hmm, stuff, that mm-hmm. really suited my personality a whole lot more because I am not this hardcore, edgy, you know, eyewitness, got to get the blood and guts kind of a reporter. So it really fit me a lot.
Well, we do live in Minnesota, and Minnesota's, you know, we do like that. And obviously, Channel 11 was onto something because every other station tried to do that. Mm-hmm. They tried to do the team spirit that we're the hometown team.
Yeah.
A few slogans that have from the rival stations that they tried doing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I watched tons of this video, and you see everyone tried to get a little softer when Care 11 came mm-hmm. on, and everyone was smiling and having a good time. And,
yeah.
And a lot of what Channel 11 did is they hired a lot of beautiful-looking people.
Mm-hmm.
And
although that was problematic with me because, I mean, seriously, but The Voice messed me up over at WCCO, and we had a news director at Channel 11 that was constantly reinforcing the idea that my face did not belong on television. And because he was very much about mm-hmm. the pretty people.
Mm-hmm.
And with me, it was kind of like, I don't know what to do with her. I mean, the ratings are really good, but we don't really, you know. I mean, he'd come up to me and he'd go, you know, we need to do something about your hair. People with red hair shouldn't be on television. It's too distracting. You mm-hmm. know, you could be Lucille Ball or Carol Burnett, but you can't be a news anchor with red hair. So he kept telling me I needed to be a brunette. I needed to be a blonde. I was basically lucky that I had my job. But the fact is, we went to number one on the weekends before anybody else did, so mm-hmm. he didn't know what to do with that information other than keep telling me to go blonde.
Well, it worked, and you probably have a record for being the same constant presence on the Weekend Anchor Chair in this town. I think that I'm trying to think of a couple others. Mike Welcher might be the only other one that might have done weekends as long as you.
Maybe. Yeah, it was 17 years. Then I quit for a while, and they lured me back in for about 6 months.
Let's take a little flashback. Let's hear our guest today, Joan Steffen, and talking about these great days at Channel 11. Let's listen to... Okay, it's a little intro here. I might have got a commercial clip on this also. But let's flash back to 88 and...
88. Oh, my gosh.
This is very soothing.
I know. I'm doing yoga in here while...
City's most watched newscast, News 11, with Joan Steffen, Kevin McDowell, Randy Shaver on sports, and meteorologist Dennis Belkin.
We know what matters. Remember that?
That's right. For kids' sake, we know what matters.
Wow. I really started to get charged up. Like, I don't know what I'm even going to say. Good evening, everybody. Topping tonight's
most watched newscast.
Yeah. That was really an honor. I mean, I grew up in this area, so it was really an honor to be part of that team.
And looked like fun.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. It was a lot of fun. I mean, Kevin McDowell became just a great, great friend. And he was my youngest daughter's godfather.
Oh, wow.
So you become like family. You know, the weather people kept floating in and out. So they would be kind of like the family member that would come and go. It's like they show up once in a while at a family reunion.
Randy was always there. And then
Randy was there. I co-anchored with him for a while,
that's
too.
That's right. I think you went through... Barry's a van, Barry Finn, Sally Patrick.
Exactly.
Dennis Felkin.
Oh, my gosh. You've got such a good memory.
Sunny House.
Yes. Which he did not want to change his name. I felt so sorry for him. He did not want to change his name. But it was during that time frame when it was like, oh, this will be great. You'll be Sunny House. Steve Wollenhouse
is his
name.
You work your whole life and they're like, nope, you're going to be Sunny. And I remember the quotations in the... in the tagline.
No. But you remember it. I suppose that was the point, but yeah, I felt for him. But no, it was great. It was great. I had a wonderful time. The only thing I struggled with was the content quite often because I am I was going to say Pollyanna, but I do kind of question sometimes how much negativity, you know, that we can put into the world without causing problems. And you know, news tends to focus on the negative.
Well, and one of the best parts about CARE at the time was CARE was very involved in the community. They came in, they said we're going to be what WCCO Radio was, a community TV station.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play another clip for you. This is from 1986.
And Lynn Bolger of St. Paul, $25. Right now we're going over to the fishbowl, my friends Kevin and Joan.
Thank you, Barry. 340-1111. Please give us a call. Joan, I said earlier that I like Paul Ho's story. Thank you. I guess that's a thing to be said for that, because I think that showed more than anything else the effects of envy on people.
To be honest, that's exactly what I've been saying to everybody. When I went out to do that story, I had no idea of the devastation of that disease, and it's devastation that it's incredible because it's something that we can do something about. There are people out there who are working on a cure. I know that it's out there. If we can only call in 340-1111, send us anything that you have. If you've been out there and watching this and enjoying this and you haven't picked up your phone, I don't think there's any excuse. I think you want to pick up that phone right now. Give us a call, 340-1111. Do it for the kids out there who are like Paul Hook.
Don't call the number now, because that was a few years ago.
I think I was trying to use my high register there. Maybe
that's in the IDS Center. And this is the MD Telethon with Stuart A. Lindman in 1986.
Wow. I mean, I've done a lot of the MD Telethons. Mm-hmm. I co-hosted with Majors a few times. I also did the Cerebral Palsy Telethons, too. So those are long nights.
Well, as a matter of fact.
Uh-oh.
Thank you. I don't use fabrics.
Live from the Plaza Hotel in downtown Minneapolis, this is the Weekend with the Stars Telethon for United Cerebral Palsy.
Good evening, I'm Kevin McDowell.
And I'm Joan Steffen.
And we're coming to you for the 1986 United Cerebral Palsy Telethon live from the Minneapolis Plaza Hotel in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping you have a lot of stamina because we are going to be here for 19 and a half hours.
Okay.
Things are turning out a little slow at the moment. These guys have lots of time to order pizza and stuff like that. But believe me, by the time 5, 6 o'clock rolls around tomorrow night, it's going to be lots of people, lots of activity, hopefully lots of money for you.
You remember, wow. I deliver.
Oh my gosh, that is funny. Those were long days, but you know, it was also fun. A lot of fun in television comes when you don't have a script,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
or when things kind of go wrong, you know, and that logically lots of things would go wrong when you didn't have a script and you were live for 24 hours.
So I want to point out JonesStefan.com. It's a great website if you want to know what Joan's doing now, and I want to talk a little bit about couple more of your stages, and then I want to talk about your book, because I'm reading Joan's website, and Joan has kind of divided her life into stages. Stage one, stage two, stage three. And stage one and two is about, stage one is about TV and at Care 11. So what made you decide to leave the anchor desk after 17 years?
Yeah, The amazing thing is, I think I had a hint that this was going to happen the first day I was on the job up in Duluth,
mm-hmm.
because I was sent over to a fatal fire my first day on the job,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a very emotional person,
mm-hmm.
and it hit me in the heart
mm-hmm.
immediately, and I thought, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can do that part of the job,
mm-hmm.
And eventually, I think that part got to me.
Sure.
I mean, I tried to be present with my heart and try mm-hmm. to be encouraging and try to do a lot of things that were more upbeat than not. But eventually, you just live in that stew long enough,
mm-hmm.
and it gets to you.